You are Locked On Phillies, your daily Philadelphia Phillies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks for making Locked On Phillies your first listen every single day. We are free and available on all platforms. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Today is Friday, November 19th, 2021. I, of course, am your host, Dan Wilson. And joining us once again for episode two here on Locked On Phillies is Tim Kelly, of course, former host of Locked On Phillies with PhilliesNation.com now. And Tim, we were talking a lot in episode one about Bryce Harper winning the MVP, Bryce Harper and, you know, the status of his contract and whether he's holding up his end of the bargain, the baseball awards in general, as well as kind of just who you pin responsible, if you will, for the 2021 Phillies season. I'll start with a question as we finish up conversation of 2021 and begin looking ahead to 2022 here in just a minute. As you see what happened in baseball, first of all, did you have any reactions to how the postseason played out, the Braves winning the World Series, or any further thoughts on that before I start asking how that relates to the Phillies?
No, I don't think a ton. I mean, it was maybe a playoffs that lacked some of the star power people are used to, especially in terms of starting pitching, but I enjoyed watching it.
So Braves win the World Series. This was a team who was 500 midway through the season. It seemed like a wide open National League East for much of the year. The Phillies, of course, went on an 8-game winning streak end of July, early August, and they were in first place, and it looked like, hey, maybe the Phillies could actually make the playoffs this year. And then the Braves, you know, getting some assistance from what they did at the trade deadline and just frankly turning it on, even when Ronald Acuna Jr. went down, go on, make the playoffs, win the National League East. The Phillies did have a fighter's chance going into Atlanta. The odds were not stacked in their favor. They get swept. And the Braves go on to win the World Series. The rest is history. I'll ask you the question that, again, your counterpart and also friend of the podcast, Johnny Heller, was clinging to a lot, which is that the Phillies did not do enough at the trade deadline. The Braves did. They won the World Series. How much of the season was decided at the trade deadline, in your opinion?
Well, I think it was definitely decided for the Braves' perspective. Those moves worked out extremely well for them. I don't know that if you take those individual players and put them in a different situation that you get the same result, though. There's a culture in Atlanta that they're just able, come August, to win when they need to. That culture does not exist in a lot of places, and the Phillies are kind of one of those places that struggled the last few years, specifically in September. So none of those players, I like Eddie Rosario, but none of those players are like superstar players on their own. But when you put them into a culture and you have a few guys there, specifically Jock Peterson, that have postseason experience, you found the right formula. I don't know that the formula for the Phillies was the exact same. I certainly don't think if they just add Eddie Rosario and Jock Peterson that we'd be talking about a World Series parade in Philadelphia. So yeah, they probably could have done more. And the moves that they did make, Kyle Gibson did not pitch very well when he came to the Phillies. So that didn't work out. So they're going to have to figure that out as well. But I don't know that having made the moves worked out. Alex Anthopoulos did a great job for the Braves. I don't know that those were necessarily the moves the Phillies needed to make.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, things did work out quite nicely from the perspective of, like, I don't know if even the Braves' biggest optimists could have expected that your NLCS and World Series MVP would have both been acquired in season in Rosario and Soler. Like, those were cases of, you know, I think things worked out about as well as they could have. To your point about the Phillies and the winning culture thing, I mean, Ronald Acuna Jr. is the best player on the Braves. Obviously, Freddie Freeman coming off an MVP season and, you know, certainly is in the conversation of one of the top players in baseball. But if the Phillies lost a player of that caliber, say if they lost Bryce Harper, I mean, there's just no chance they're anywhere close to as good as the Braves. Am I right?
Yeah, no, I've had that discussion with other people. If Bryce Harper went down at the exact same time that Ronald Acuna went down, the Phillies would have won 73 games this season. Like, that's just about
the reality of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if you still have Rhys Hoskins go down and some of the other things that transpired.
And then when you look at, you know, how well the Braves look, they won a division that it seemed like this was the open year, right? Like, they are, they've been the powerhouse in the division, winning year after year after year now, similar to what we were accustomed to here in Philadelphia, 07 through 11. They finally got their World Series title a little bit later in the game here, but this was the year that it was open. To what degree do you believe, like, we were sitting here in episode one talking about the Phillies window and what is the window for the Phillies to try and win this division? And this seemed like the year where everything aligned. Acuña goes down. The Mets are not as good as expected. The Braves are not taking control of the division for the first 4 months of the season almost. Was this, like, how big of an opportunity was missed here by the Phillies? And I mean, what are the odds that they get, I don't want to say the stars to align the same way, but the, as good of a chance as they had this year to repeat that in the future, like, how much better are they going to have to play in future seasons as a result of not getting things done here in 2021?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, since I've followed baseball, let's say 2000 on, I don't remember a season where the National League East was more winnable than it was this year, and the Phillies didn't walk through the open door. And now you'll have Ronald Acuña coming back for the Braves next year. I think they'll be more like a 92 or 93 win team, if I had to guess. I think the Marlins, the organizational depth they have in pitching is pretty insane. If they add a few bats, they're going to be a problem. I'm not betting anything on the Mets, and the Nationals are obviously rebuilding. But, yeah, this was the year to walk through the door, and they did not do it. That doesn't mean they can't eventually win the NL East again, but I don't think you're going to be doing it with 87 or 88 wins again.
More Locked on Phillies with Tim Kelly coming right up. But first, I have to tell you about betonline.ag. We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile device, or mobile website, I should say, on your mobile device, and sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus from basketball, football, baseball postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports. BetOnline.ag, it's where the game starts. Tim, I promised we would transition into the offseason here, and that's exactly what we're going to do. You know, it may take 93, 94, even 95 wins, just like you said, for this Phillies team to win the National League East here next season or in the near future. Of course, there is always the opportunity for wild card spot, but you never know how many wins it's going to take to win something like that in the year 2021. Yes, the Brewers were able to get that second wild card spot, but to even host the wild card game, you apparently had to be in one of the greatest divisional races of all time out in the National League West and win 100 plus games. So in terms of actually getting into the tournament where you're playing a playoff series, the Phillies are going to have to add, I mean, maybe at least 10 wins here at some point in the near future if they want to try and maximize Bryce Harper's prime, if they want to try and maximize a guy like JT Realmuto's prime, Rhys Hoskins. Hopefully you get a bounce back season from Aaron Nola. I mean, the list goes on and on. But I'll start with kind of the very basic offseason question of, we've assessed what went wrong in the year 2021. Biggest offseason needs and any specific names you're looking at here. Again, as we are now, awards have wrapped up, playoffs have wrapped up, everything is now flipping to 2022. And of course, there is a looming lockout that we'll get to, but biggest offseason needs for the Phillies as you see it.
I think they need a closer. That is no, I'm not someone that thinks necessarily you need to always invest in a closer, but the Phillies have had so many issues in the last few years that they just need someone you can plug in there and not have to worry about. And My guess is I think they'll trade for Craig Kimbrell, but we'll see what ultimately happens there. There's obviously Kenley Jansen and some different veterans available in free agency that are possible. So Mark Melanson is another one. I don't think I'm giving up draft picks to sign Iglesias, but he's out there as well. But I also think lineup-wise, you need guys to check multiple boxes. So the three boxes you need checked are a leadoff hitter, like a number five hitter, and two outfield positions, or shortstop, I guess. But the two outfield positions are the biggest. So Starling Marte checks two boxes. He can lead off and he can play center field. Kyle Schwarber checks two boxes. He really could check three boxes. He plays an outfield position. He could lead off. He was for the Nationals for a little while, or he could hit behind Rhys Hoskins in the lineup. So you do that. And the thing about those two guys is that you don't have to give up draft compensation to sign them because they're both couldn't be given a qualifying offer because they were traded. Michael Conforto might be a little too rich, especially since he did decline a qualifying offer, but I've always liked him a lot as a player, and I think he would fit in the lineup and in left field very well for the Phillies. The one I'm intrigued about, like I generally think the outfield is what needs to be addressed, but if Trevor Story gets like slow played by the market and he's like the odd man out that doesn't get paid and that gets into a 5 or 6 year range, I would keep my eye on that just because Trevor Story would give you someone that is a very good fielder, which you don't have at any position right now, and is a middle of the order bat too. So that's kind of what I'd keep my eye on. But I think generally you need to try to get better without giving up draft compensation. And Kyle Schwarber does that. Starling Marte does that. And the addition of Kevin Long, I think, is really going to be underrated heading into next season.
So a few things I wanted to kind of follow up on there. Number one is you mentioned Trevor Story, and we've heard many things. I mean, all about the shortstop class that heading into this offseason. And because there are so many shortstops, you know, whether it's Seager, Correa, Story, the list kind of goes on here, is like, is there going to be an odd man out? Is there a chance that, I don't want to say you get one of those guys, quote unquote, on the cheap, but cheaper than you ordinarily would? And how interested should the Phillies be in any of those guys if the quote unquote right deal comes along, given that, you know, it seems like they are high on Bryson Stott. Would you consider moving Stott to second base? Does that mean Gene Segura is the odd man out? I mean, we've heard him in trade rumors as well. Like, what is the future of the organization if you go in that direction? And then additionally, like with so many shortstops on the market, so many big name shortstops on the market here this offseason, does it generally lead to a case where one of those guys probably signs for a little bit less because, you know, generally speaking, they're, you know, not everyone can just be interested in everyone all at once.
Yeah, I think the Yankees are saying right now that they're more interested in a stopgap, and I tend to think that's posturing. But if that turns out to be true, then look out. I mean, you already have the Mariners have kind of checked themselves out because they're going to keep J.P. Crawford at shortstop instead of pursuing Carlos Correa. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but you have maybe a situation where one of these guys falls. Now, I would be Marcus Semien is a superstar, don't get me wrong, but he's 31 and played this last year at second base. And in 2020, a lot of his defensive numbers seem to be declining at shortstop. So I'd be really cautious there. Although I do think it's an interesting discussion to say, if you could undo the JT Realmuto deal, would you rather have his deal or Marcus Semien's deal? It's interesting to think about.
Semien, of course, a guy who the Phillies had a chance to acquire a season ago. Obviously, kind of still kicking yourself on that. Baez was the other one I forgot to mention as well. Like,
Baez doesn't do it for me.
Well, I think there are a lot of people, and myself included, who Javier Baez does not.
And it's not even because of the thumbs down thing. I don't care about that. But
I know I'm not talking about that either. Just
he wasn't playing well for the Cubs the last year.
Guy's horrible plate discipline. Like, and there's a lot wrong with his game.
I think like as he ages, the long swing will not
play.
Yeah, right. It doesn't seem like something that's going to age well. He's a fun player. I'm not discounting that, and he is a good fielder, so that would help you. But Trevor Story is the one that interests me, I think, because he's going to, there's the best chance both that he gets into a reasonable range and also that he is still relatively young. He's a few years younger than Marcus Semien. So I'd be interested in that if it gets to 5 or 6 years. And I think in terms of what you do with Bryson Stott, you worry about that when you have to worry about it. I wouldn't trade Gene Segura right now. This last guaranteed year of his deal. So if you feel comfortable next year with Bryson Stott, go for it. I don't think right now that you're in a position where you're sure Bryson Stott is going to stay at shortstop long-term. The Phillies are saying that, but if you have a chance to get Trevor Story, who's like a gold glove caliber shortstop, then I think you do that and you worry about Bryson Stott. Maybe later in that deal, Trevor Story shifts to third base and Bryson Stott plays shortstop. I'm extremely impressed with what Bryson Stott has done in the fall league, but it would not preclude me from signing a shortstop this offseason if the market gets into the right place.
And then I guess the final thing I'll do here before we go into our final break here is, okay, so the shortstops are out there. There's obviously a number of guys you could trade for. What is your, if we're talking offense only, what is the priority in which you're filling these spots? Is it, okay, one of the shortstops is out there that fills that need there? I mean, it seems like Didi Gregorius is totally out of the equation and I agree with that. I don't think he can be your shortstop heading into next year. I didn't even want him for more than a 1 year qualifying offer a season ago. But if you take a look at a number of the guys you mentioned, and like, is the priority, all right, get yourself a leadoff hitter and figure out where he plays in the field later? Is it get yourself a center fielder and left fielder, and then, you know, the bat, you just try and work him into the lineup? Like, what is the pecking order of how you fill those needs? Does it need to be a center fielder and leadoff type of guy, or a Schwarber, a guy who's let off before and he's more of a left field type? Like, how are you filling in these holes? Because I think there's a number of them and the market has to dictate that at least somewhat.
I think you need to get a guy that fills multiple of those. I don't know that it has to be a center fielder, it has to be a left fielder, but it has to be someone that plays one of those positions and can either lead off or be a number five hitter for you. It can't be someone that only fills one box, if that makes sense. I do think that it's going to be easier to find that like number five type hitter at the trade deadline than it would be to find a leadoff hitter. Because if leadoff hitters fell off trees, the Phillies probably would have traded for one at the deadline last year. So if you sign Starling Marte, he's your leadoff guy and your center fielder, you fix that problem. I think like Kyle Schwarber is an example of someone that at the beginning of last season, you wouldn't have thought of him as, oh, that's a huge impact trade deadline addition. But given how the season played out, he was available at the deadline. You didn't have to tear your farm system down to get him. Like those type of guys, the Mets went to the World Series in 2015 and Cespedes was their best hitter that they acquired at the deadline. So finding those power type guys, I think, is easier to do at the deadline than finding a leadoff hitter.
And we'll head into our final break here really quickly before I do this ad read. Do you have, you know, Thanksgiving coming up in 6 days here? You have any, first of all, are you, because this has become a debate online for years, are you pro Thanksgiving food, anti Thanksgiving food, any takes on the holiday or the food in general you'd like to drop on us?
I'm pro Thanksgiving food, but I don't really eat stuffing and I don't like cranberry sauce, but mashed potatoes alone. And I like sweet potatoes too. So yeah, I mean, that alone, I love the holiday for, and I love Thanksgiving. I legitimately enjoy watching the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving. Like, I signed up on Odyssey to work during that game specifically on Thanksgiving. It's just, it's something you do.
It's just that the Lions are just ingrained in your Thanksgiving tradition. Yeah. You need to see, no matter how bad they are, there needs to
be. No, that it makes it even worse. The year that they beat the crap out of the Eagles on Thanksgiving, is something fell off. The Lions need to lose by at least 2 touchdowns. And then the Cowboys kind of similar. Like there was a year, it might have actually been the year the Eagles got blown out, but then the Cowboys got stomped by Cam Newton and the Panthers. So things evened out. One of the two teams needs to get blown out.
That's just, so you don't even want good games. You just want those teams, at least one of them getting killed.
This is my take. The night game does not count as a Thanksgiving game, even though it's on Thanksgiving. That's like its own entity. There'd be a Thursday night game regardless. The first two are the Thanksgiving games.
Well, because for years, I mean, the Thanksgiving games existed before Thursday night football was a thing. And then I think it was like 2006, they added the Thanksgiving game. And then that was on NFL Network when NFL Network was first becoming a thing. And then they expanded a little bit and then they started doing games Thanksgiving through the end of the year. And then November 1st to the end of the year. Now we just have Thursday night football every week on NFL Network and then sometimes on network television. And then NBC just scooped up that game as well. So it's just become like a triple header. But you're right. There is no traditional team in that slot. The Eagles in our lifetime have actually, I think they've played in each one of those time slots once. I want to say they played the Cardinals at home in like 08. They played
the Cowboys. That was the game McNabb had been benched the week before and he came back and had one of the best games of his career. You have the Thanksgiving game where Mark Sanchez and the Eagles curb stomped the Cowboys.
And then didn't win another game.
Lost like every game the rest of the season. You have the Lions game where Calvin Johnson single-handedly just bodied the Eagles. I'm trying to remember who was at corner. I don't know if it was Kerry Williams. There's so many bad Eagles corners, it's hard to keep track of.
Yeah, that was a bad year for sure. By the way, really quick before I get to it, you know, I've gotten a little off topic here, but that's totally fine. I'm with you on mashed potatoes, could eat those all day. Not with you on the stuffing. I think stuffing is really good. I'm with you on the cranberry sauce and mac and cheese. I think underrated Thanksgiving food that doesn't make its way to every single table, but absolutely needs to be. So
it has to be homemade though. You can't roll out with Kraft mac. You're not
rolling out like the frozen
Kraft. No, you're not getting Stouffer's and heating it up in the microwave.
How about the little packets? Do the packets work for?
No, but you can get away with the. You should make your own mashed potatoes, but the microwave mashed potatoes are still pretty good. You can get away with
that. You can get away with those. Okay. Well, that was Thanksgiving talk with Tim Kelly. And I just want to say that I love Thanksgiving, all the good food and treats, and there's plenty of them. But maybe you want a yummy dessert this year at Thanksgiving that isn't so full of calories and sugar like traditional Thanksgiving desserts. It's the perfect time, Tim, for a Built Bar. Built Bar is a new holiday dessert. Feast on something delicious and feel good about it. One slice of pie is upwards of 300 calories, and that's on the low end. Most Built Bars are only 130 calories and 4 grams of sugar with plenty of protein. Replace the coconut cream pie with the coconut Built Bar, or go for a raspberry Built Bar instead of that raspberry pie. Lots of good flavors to replace any kind of pie.
I still have the Built Bar powders from when they sent them to me when I did the ad reads. Those are great too.
Well, there you go. And then you get an endorsement from a former Locked On Phillies host as well. They're low calorie, low carb, low fat, high in protein, covered in 100% real chocolate. Built Bar is a great option for when you're hungry. And if Thanksgiving isn't coming soon enough, go for a Built Bar or two or three or 10, you know, do whatever you need to do. Share some at your family gatherings. It'll make things less awkward. Maybe Aunt Betty just hasn't tried a Built Bar yet, and that'll calm everyone down. New surprises all month. Limited time flavors arriving at built.com regularly. So check the site often. There's nothing like a Built Bar Black Friday. Mark your calendar. Black Friday will be a huge event with all sorts of surprises. Offer, go to built.com. Use the promo code LOCK15 and you'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15 for 15% off your order. One last time, that's LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com. Tim, perhaps the biggest overall baseball issue that we have not tackled yet, and we'll do so here in the final segment, the lockout that will begin on December 1st. And it does appear like it will begin on December 1st seems unlikely. I don't think anyone with any type of knowledge of the situation expects that anything will get done between now and then. How does this affect baseball in general? How does this affect the Phillies individually? How long do you expect it to go on? I mean, just give me all your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I'm obviously following it closely because this was the first time I'm scheduled to go to the winter meetings, which start on like December 2nd. And like everything's booked in Florida. Now I don't think I'm going to be going, but I don't know that for sure. And I don't even know that they're going to tell us for sure. The whole thing, it's very strange.
You're going to show up and there's going to be a sign at the door that says go home.
Yeah. Well, I'm not like a big Florida person. So if I'm not going there for the winter meetings, like I'm not really, I don't like rides. So there's not really a reason to go to Orlando otherwise. But I do think the lockout is going to start. No, I don't think the 162 game schedule is going to be affected, but Will spring training get affected? Maybe. And honestly, I wouldn't mind that because spring training is like 2 weeks too long as it is. But you do have some momentum now this offseason, and maybe that's because teams know a lockout is coming. But you've had Syndergaard sign. You've had Verlander sign. Marte seems like he's probably going to sign before the lockout starts. And you're going to completely halt all that momentum, which baseball does not need. And you're just going to have people do not want to hear about a labor dispute. We all already kind of had one the other year in 2020 when they were trying to figure that season out. So it's not good for the sport, certainly. There's things that they need to figure out in the CBA. They need to figure out the DH one way or another. They need to figure out something with the shift and how to shorten game times. There's a lot of things that need to be sorted out here. And I have a feeling a lot of them won't end up being sorted out, and we'll be back having the same discussion in 4 or 5 years.
In terms of, you know, you said you don't think the 162-game season will be affected. Maybe spring training will be. In terms of the offseason, you know, do we see more of a, you know, as you mentioned, there has been some movement already, but not a ton, and certainly none of the big names, shortstop class, anything like that. I mean, are there going to be deals going on behind the scenes here? And when everything gets settled, we just rapid fire, see one deal after another, like it's an NBA or NFL off season. Do we just see the off season get underway really late? Do we just have a shorter amount of time than usual to get everything done? Like, how does that get affected? And from a Phillies perspective, I mean, if you're, say, Dave Dombrowski right now, how are you attacking this off season differently?
You would almost kind of like to have like one in the bank before you go into a lockout, so you can reassess during that period. So whether that's, I mean, one way or another, you're going to probably know about Starling Marte before the lockout, I would think, and maybe before the end of next week. But beyond that, you would like to at least have one of your off-season needs kind of checked off, so that the second the lockout ends, you don't have to handle every single need on your team. It's interesting. Like, if it lasts a month, then that doesn't change things a ton. If it lasts 2 months, it's going to change things drastically. And we saw it a few years ago, when the NFL had the lockout, and then there was the mass signing of people, and the Eagles won the offseason and then were a disaster during the regular season. Obviously, baseball is not as much of a team game as football, but you'd still like to have a chance for guys to get comfortable. And I know players say control what you can control. I don't think it'd be very fun to be a player and spend the entire lockout not knowing where you're going to live that year, things like that. Like, I think that probably affected Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, their first seasons of their deals, that drug all the way into spring training, and you had no certainty. You can say you block it out, all that, but when you're worrying about your family and where your kids are going to go to school, etc., like, it's impossible not to let that bother you and distract you a little bit. So it's not great for players, certainly.
I'll get you out of here on this. Any bold offseason predictions? I know earlier said you do believe the Phillies will trade for Craig Kimbrel. It could be another Phillies move, a move we see, you know, in the rest of baseball, maybe a lockout prediction, anything. What are we going to see here in the next, I don't know, 4 months?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think the Texas Rangers and the Seattle Mariners are going to have big off seasons. I think the Mariners are going to sign someone.
Mariners, who were sitting on breaking their own playoff streak up until the final weekend. Yeah.
JP Crawford is going to end up back in the playoffs before the Phillies. Chris Bryant or Marcus Semien to the Mariners. And then the Rangers, this isn't really an original idea, but I think they could end up with Trevor Story and Clayton Kershaw, who are both from the state, and that would be kind of cool because they've kind of – the Astros have had the best five-year stretch in the history of their team, and the Rangers have been a mess for 5 years.
Tim Kelly, always fun having you on the podcast. Anything we should look for on the site coming up? Obviously, you know, we are into – offseason here, obviously a lot of good Bryce Harper MVP coverage, but as we head into Thanksgiving and potentially a lockout here, which would be looking for at PhilliesNation.com?
Nothing specifically planned, but I mean, obviously rumors coverage. If there's nothing too small for Phillies Nation to cover about the Phillies. That's what I love about it. And then also I'm always covering baseball and Odyssey as well.
Well, if there's nothing too small, there is one more question that I should ask you before we get out of here. Something or nothing, the original Fanatic coming back this week.
Oh, it's definitely something. I mean, I didn't want to rock the boat too much, but that other Fanatic was not very good. Like, there was a clear downgrade in that thing. The Fanatic should not have gills and a tail feather and those things for eyelashes. Like, this Fanatic, the longer snout, better shoes. I like this Fanatic a lot, so I'm excited for that.
It'll forever be known as the Pandemic Fanatic. And it'll get flushed away, hopefully, just right along with COVID.
Yeah, like, what are they going to do with that costume? That's what I'm wondering.
With the old one?
With the new old one, the Pandemic Fanatic. What happens to
what happens to the Pandemic Fanatic? I don't know. Well, so they were still saying that the new one was from the Galapagos, so maybe it just makes its way back.
Send it back.
Send it.
Let it be in its natural habitat.
Is the Pandemic Fanatic getting deported, or what? I mean, what's going on? I don't know. I don't know. You're right. They need to follow up on that. And
like, because the bell outside the stadium after the vet, they just like gave it away, and luckily managed to find it because it's like the coolest part of Citizens Bank Park now.
That's right. You covered that story. What was the, you probably know more about it than I do. Like, where was it given to and how they managed to get it back really fast?
I don't know. When the vet closed, they just like gave it away. Coggin Toboggan, who writes for Crossing Broad,
They just thought no one would ever want this.
Investigation about the whole thing. And eventually they got it back and restored. And I love it. Like, it's a different light color every night. It was green when I was down there for an Eagles game the one day. So it's awesome. It's like, that would never happen now that they just give that away or throw it away. Basically, it's like the Veterans Stadium was a dump, but at least for baseball,
keep the cool parts.
But the coolest part was the giant Liberty Bell on top of the stadium. And they're just like,
we don't need it.
Yeah,
no one will ever notice.
Who wants this thing?
Yeah, until years from now when social media exists.
Yeah.
Philadelphia fans launch a full investigation. Tim Kelly, always fun. Thank you for coming on. I want to thank you, the listeners, for making Locked On Phillies your first listen every single day. We are free and available on all platforms. And also want to remind you to listen to the Locked On Bets podcast. Make that your second listen, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. Tim Kelly, thanks again.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dan.